Okay, so let's just summarize what we have here. This is in the second parak of Maseches Sukkah, where they're discussing... You ever learn Sukkah? Okay, so the first parak of Sukkah really discusses the laws of the structure of the Sukkah. And that's where we get most of the halachas of how to build a Sukkah. And then the second parak of Sukkah discusses the mitzvah of how you should dwell in the Sukkah. It's like... A shift between the Chefza and the Gavra of Hilchos Sukkah. And then the third parak and on deals a lot with the mitzvah of Netilas Dalet Minim. And then the fifth parak has some things related to the Beis HaMikdash and other assorted issues. So in the middle of the second parak, so we talk about who is Chayim and who is Potter from living in a Sukkah. So we start off Shluchei Mitzvah Pturim in HaSukkah. So the term Shluchei Mitzvah is a little bit of a of an English misnomer. Like, we would translate shluchim as what?
Messengers,
right? So messengers doesn't really mean someone who was sent to do a mitzvah. Whenever the, you know, when you find Chazal using the term shluchei mitzvah, it more means someone on their way to do a mitzvah. They are, you know, we're all messengers in the sense that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is the mishaleach, that he sends us to do a mitzvah, and we are the shluchim going on our way to do the mitzvah. Now, I don't know if that's why they call them shluchim mitzvah. It could just be a figure of speech in, you know, biblical and Mishnaic Hebrew. I don't really know. But nevertheless, that we're always, when you see the term shluchim mitzvah, generally speaking, it doesn't mean you're a shaliach, like a person is delivering a get or something like that. Rather, it means you're shluchei mitzvah, you're on your way to do a mitzvah. Fine. So those are the first category of those who are potter from doing mitzvos. Chol inu misham sheyen, peturim min hasukkah. Also, who else is potter from sitting in the sukkah? A sick person and those taking care of the sick person. And last but not least, ochlin v'shosin arai, chutz l'sukkah. You can eat and drink in a way that's considered arai, which is temporary, that it's considered to be a snack or anything that's not a real meal, right? Basically, the Gemara outlines up to a kibetza of pas. It can be anything less than one egg's worth of bread is considered achila sarai. Okay, so there's a very important Rashi for our purposes, but before we even read the Rashi, so it's interesting to note that the way the Gemara is going to treat this is they start off by saying, Minahani mili, how do I know this? Now, how do I know this? So it can't be talking about cholim misham shein or ochlim v'shosen arai chutz l'sukkah because the psukim they're going to quote from Kriyat Shema have absolutely nothing to do with Hilchos Sukkah. So obviously it's talking about the first statement of shluchei mitzvah p'turim in a sukkah. And not only that, but minahani mili still has nothing to do with sukkahs. So the pashtus is that it's referring to the concept of osik v'mitzvah, potim and mitzvah in general, not necessarily the concept of shluchei mitzvah p'turim in a sukkah. So that is, it's a little bit strange that the Gemara does that. Because really, we're not talking about the concept of osik v'mitzvah, potim and mitzvah. Right? For example, the other places where this will show up, and there's a little bit of overlap in the Gemara, is in Maseches Brachos, where they discuss a chasan is potter from Kriyat Shema.
It's also in Mitzvah, the first pair.
Right, because of the same thing. That's already derech agav of the sugya of Bir Rishona on Shabbos, right? Because they just want to talk about is the osik v'mitzvah potim and hamitzvah there for the sake of right? In other words, if he's chayav to say Kriyat Shema on Friday night, it's a raya that he's not allowed to be Rishona on Friday night, right? So that's you don't really have so many kashas on because when they bring it as a raya to something else, so you know why it's there.
Yeah.
Here it's a little weird. Why is it here? It doesn't seem to belong. You know, that it's really not related to Sukkah in any way, and the Mishnah. So Mela of the Gemara brings it. So you understand the Gemara likes to go off on tangents. So, but the Mishnah doesn't generally go off on a tangent unless it's very clear. So that's a kasha that is somewhat unresolved in the mainstream Mefarshim. If you like the Sefer. You could look in the Sefer Mishnah Siyavitz. You ever see the Sefer Mishnah Siyavitz?
Yes.
It's a very nice Sefer. It's Rabbi Tzal Jolti. He was one of the early chief rabbis of Yerushalayim. He's an Adam Gadol. He has beautiful things to say. And in general, if you like a Sefer, what basically every piece in the Mishnah Siyavitz is the same. He gives you like all the good standard approaches to the sugya. It's like, you know, old school raid sefer where he just gives you all the standard shittas, and then he says something wild at the end. So this is no different. He has a very nice piece on Osik B'Mitzvah where he goes through this, and then he wants to suggest that really all the things in the Mishnah are based on Hilchos Sukkah. They're not really based on Osik B'Mitzvah, Patur Min HaMitzvah in the classic sense. But it's a little bit involved, so I'm not going to get into it now, but he's the only one who I've actually seen who deals with this particular problem outright. Everyone else just goes with the Gemara. The Gemara wants to talk about Osik B'Mitzvah. Okay, so Mela, the Mishnah, was talking about Osik B'Mitzvah. But he wants to say that Shluchi Mitzvah Patur Min HaSukkah has to start with Hilchos Sukkah, and the concept that we find in the rest of the halachos of the Mishnah, which is the concept of what we call teshvu kein taduru, that you're supposed to live in the sukkah the same way you would live in your house. But generally speaking, nobody's too bothered with this problem. But it's if you have some time, some point in your life, there is that mar makom to keep in mind, or the Mishnah Siyavitz from Jolti on this Mishnah. So the Gemara asks. Oh, before we get to that, we got to do the Rashi. So Rashi says, "Shluchei mitzvah, holchei v'derech mitzvah." People on their way to do a mitzvah. Kigon, and he gives examples: lilmo Torah, to learn Torah; v'hakbil pnei rabo, they want to they want to greet their Rebbe. Yeah, please sit. They want to greet their Rebbe, and liftos shvuyim, do pidyon shvuyim. So also another point we're not really going to discuss now, but also worth noting, some of these, the Rashi's examples are weird. Specifically, kigon lilmo Torah, right? What's weird about lilmo Torah?
It's voluntary.
It's voluntary. So what do you mean by that?
That you're choosing to do a mitzvah that you can do at any time instead of doing a mitzvah. Pretty much,
that exact time. So that's an interesting point. That's a very interesting point. It's an issue of time. I mean, so let's say it's not really 100% so. Meaning, you have 7 days of Sukkot, 8 days in Chutzlaretz, and you got to learn some Torah at some point.
You can learn Torah in the Sukkot.
Right. So the Gemara discusses that further. Can you really, should you learn Torah in the Sukkah, or should you go to the Beis HaMedrash? And the Gemara differentiates between the type of learning that's more easily done in an environment that's designed for it, right? So the Gemara discusses the difference between maybe learning Be'iyun versus learning Be'kiyus, and maybe it's if you have a difficult Iyun Shiloh, where you sort of have to like stand up and pace and argue with somebody. So if you're in a Sukkah, also if you're learning the Sefer Sukkah, the minimal shear for a sukkah is smaller than tiny. It's 7 by 7 by 10 tefachim, which is nothing. Like, yeah. I know people used to be a little bit shorter, but they weren't like all tiny, you know. Yeah. So it's hard to imagine even being in such a sukkah. But nevertheless, so anything that would require some type of movement or swinging of thumbs and fists and whatever, it's like already. They recommend going to the Beis HaMedrash for that because it's too difficult to do in the sukkah. But okay, but for our purposes, let's assume over the course of time there is an obligation to learn Torah at minimum, something in the morning and something at night. But there is such a time that you are chayav to learn Torah. But one thing that's very difficult about this example that Rashi gives is that the concept of Osik B'Mitzvah, Patur Min HaMitzvah may not apply to Talmud Torah. It might be the exception to the rule. There are a few exceptions, not many, to the concept of Osik B'Mitzvah, Patur Min HaMitzvah. Talmud Torah might be one of those exceptions. So hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about that. But just in case we don't, that's also something to keep in mind. It's important to note these small little ha'aris, but I don't want to lose focus on the main sugya. So Rashi says, furthermore, p'turim min ha'sukkah ve'afilu b'sha'as chaniyasan, even when they are resting. So that's the difficult point in Rashi that everybody's going to focus on. The Rashi says, you're p'ter from the sukkah even while resting. So what does that mean exactly? How do you envision somebody resting from their mitzvah to the point that they're still going to be potter from other mitzvahs? It's a little bit weird, no? Like you're on your way to do a mitzvah, you have to deliver some tzedakah to Eretz Yisrael. So you're sleeping on the plane for 12 hours and you miss Zman Kriya Shema, Zman Tfila. You know, you're missing Talis and Tfilin and everything. You know, I'm on my way to do a mitzvah here and I'm resting. So it's a little hard to know how to quantify what Rashi is saying. It's a little bit weird. Okay, so Tosfos is very much bothered by Rashi over here. Let's read the Tosfos inside. So he says, "Holke b'dvar mitzvah nol nol motor lahaklo p'nei rabo lifto shivuyim p'tur min asukah v'afilu b'shas chaniyas and kach pirish b'kuntris p'chein mashma b'gemara." Now he says there's actually very strong evidence to Rashi from the continuation of the Gemara, because it says, we didn't see this Gemara together, but on the next Amid it says, "Holke l'dvar mitzvah p'tur min asukah bein b'yom bein b'layla." If you're on your way to do a mitzvah, you're potter from the sukkah, both by day and by night. And umashma afal bishen hochen ala b'yom. Generally speaking, people in those days did not travel at night. So if it said bein b'yom bein b'layla, so it sounds that you would be potter even while you're resting at night. And I don't know that they slept the entire night. Like if you have a winter evening, right, at sukkah's time already, the nights are pretty balanced. You know, it's getting shorter now. You can notice that, like, when you come out of dinner, it's already darker than it was at the beginning of the summer. But nevertheless, it's still, you know, the nights are fairly short. So they slept a lot of the night, but they didn't sleep from the second the sun went down until the second the sun came up. They could have done the mitzvah. So it says the iazli b'yamam of Eluya afilu dvar rishos nami p'tiri. Right, so he says that if they'd be walking both by day and by night, they'd be putter from everything. Kirikatani b'braisa, right? The braisa says basically when you're traveling, you're putter regardless of the halacha of osik b'mitzvah putter min ha-mitzvah. So the Tosfos is just bringing up there's a intertwining of two halachas here when it comes to the sukkah. One is the issue of osik b'mitzvah putter min ha-mitzvah, and the second one is the issue of what we call teshuv kein taduru, that just as you don't remain in your house for the entire day on any given day, you go places, so too. And in the sukkah, you go places, you're allowed to travel and not to have to sit in the sukkah the whole time. You're not considered to be mavatel, the mitzvah sukkah, while you're on the road. I always like to tell this story. When I was in yeshiva in Israel, we were on our way back, I think on Hoshana Rab, we're on our way back to yeshiva for Simchas Torah, and this guy, we were exhausted because we did like one of those all night learning things for Leil Hoshana Rabba. It's big in Eretz Yisrael, not so big in the States, but we were up all night. We were falling asleep in the taxi back to yeshiva, and this one guy kept waking everybody up. He's like, "You're not even allowed to sleep a Shana Sarai outside the sukkah. What are you doing? Like, you can't." And like, so the one Gemara he chose to read was so annoying. Like, he couldn't read the rest of the Gemaras that say that Holchin Drachim are Pturim in a sukkah, that when you're traveling, you're Pater from the sukkah, you're allowed to sleep outside the sukkah when you're, I once had the rabbi of a shul gave a drasha on in between Mincha and Marav. Are you allowed to fall asleep during the rabbi's drasha on sukkahs in the shul? I mean, you go to shul, and so if he tied it, if your normal behavior is that every time the rabbi gets up to give a shir, you fall asleep, so then it could be that it's mutter to do that even on sukkahs. It's not considered sleeping outside the sukkah because you're not at home. Usually, your normal derech is you go to shul to take a nap. So also here, he thought it would be mutter on sukkahs as well. You don't have to worry about falling asleep during the rabbi's shir, even if it's sukkahs. I mean, you could discuss that, but I thought it was a cute topic to sort of bring in the issue of Shana Sarai outside the sukkah in that particular context. But okay, so back to what we're talking about here is that Tosfos is saying, obviously, if the Gemara is telling you this chiddush that they're putter from the sukkah, it must be that they're not actually traveling. Otherwise, that would have been subsumed under the other category of travelers being putter from the sukkah because of Teshuv Kein Tadur. So that's what he was suggesting. Fine. Right, so there's also, they tell a story that Rabba and Rav Huna slept on the riverbanks of Sura. They were saying that, and they said, we're shluchi mitzvah, because I think they were on their way to greet the Reish Galusa, so they were doing the mitzvah of l'hakol p'nei Rabba, and like Rashi mentions, that there's a mitzvah to go greet your Rebbe on Yantif, on Chol Moed, let's say. So therefore, they slept outside the sukkah. Okay, so that's Tosfos saying, listen, I can't really dispute the fact that Rashi is very firmly grounded in the Gemara. But he's not happy about it anyway. V'teima, im yichol mekayim shneim amay p'turin. If you can do both mitzvahs, why are you potter? And now he gives what seems to be an awesome raya, but if you think about it for more than 5 seconds, it's really not a good raya at all. So he says that, Otu odom sheyesh lo tzitzis bevigdo v'tfilin barosho mi mifter bekach mishar mitzvos. He says, I don't get it. I'm wearing tzitzis. So okay, I will seek my mitzvah, patim and a mitzvah. I'm patim from Kol Torah Kula the whole day. I'm wearing tefillin. In those days they wore tefillin. I don't know if in times of Tosfos they wore tefillin all day, but the irony is nowadays we only put on tefillin when we're about to do another mitzvah. We put on tefillin because we dafka for davening and kriya shema because we don't want to violate the lashon of the Gemara that is kilu meyed edu sheker ba'atzmo to say kriya shema without tefillin, to daven without tefillin. So we put on the tefillin and then we do another mitzvah. So we should say, oh, I put on the tefillin, now I'm patur from all the other mitzvahs, because I'm osik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah.
Two very different things, though.
So what do you mean?
It's not an active mitzvah. You don't have to always be like constantly thinking about your tzitzis while you're wearing them.
Well, resting is not active either.
See, that's resting. It requires a machshava. It's an active mitzvah.
It requires a machshava? What do you mean?
A machshava. It requires a machshava to wear tzitzis. So you're not tarred in it. You're not at all tarred in wearing tzitzis. Whereas even when you're on your way, you can still be tarred when you're going to sleep. The reason I'm going to sleep now is to rest for the next day. You're not tarred with machshava, whereas you...
Right. So as we see from the Gemara, as you're pointing out very accurately, that it's not just physical asek that is machayev a person in the mitzvah. We have the shivtach of v'secha, right? Prat osik v'mitzvah, v'lech chava derech, prat l'chasan. So you see, what's a chassan? A chassan is if you would have like a hidden camera on the chassan, and what's his whole thing? He has to be bol bir rishona. He's nervous. Maybe she's not really a basula. You got to remember in those days, all the marriages were arranged marriages. So he didn't really know this girl very well, and he's basically hopefully been shomer Torah mitzvahs his whole life. So this is something that's a completely unfamiliar territory for him. So he's very nervous. It's not a very chilled out situation where he can sort of relax. So there's a lot of tirda de machshava at that point, and therefore the Torah is machadish, not just physical asek b'mitzvah, even tirda of machshava is considered to be enough to pater you from the mitzvah.
Do you say the original miss has to be miyakev?
What do you mean?
Or just impinge upon? Like if it's the only time, I guess it limits Isaac mitzvah patur mitzvah for a lot of people to say this. But to say Isaac mitzvah patur mitzvah, it only applies when it's mi'akev the second mitzvah.
Ah,
but
so
I guess
this
that's
is
not Isaac mitzvah.
But this is what Tosfos is going for.
Right,
that's what Tosfos is going for.
Isn't that an issue? Because then in Tosfos, why do we need this rule in Isaac mitzvah patur mitzvah? Obviously, if it's mi'akev, then I can't do it.
Great kasha. You hear what he's saying? What's your name, by the way?
Yossi
has a great kasha. Right? So the kasha is, there's no chiddush of osik mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. It's already subsumed under the larger category of what? You can describe it in other words. Yeah, but can you say
no,
it?
I know the Gemara term, I'm just forgetting.
Yeah, so say it in other words.
It's when you're, I'm blanking.
Okay, what I was thinking could be you're thinking something else. What I was thinking is it's already subsumed under the concept of onus rachmana patre. I can't do two things at once, right? All the studies show that everyone who thinks they can multitask can't multitask. It's not a human trait that we can really do with any sort of expertise. We can't multitask. So if you're trying to do mitzvah A, and then you want to do mitzvah B also at the same time, it's not a physical possibility. We don't have that ability to do two things at once. And therefore, the Torah says, "Anas rachmana patri lo nitna Torah l'malachei asharis." We don't have the ability to do two things at once. And therefore, we are not responsible to do two mitzvahs at once.
Isn't that also a little different, though? Because it doesn't necessarily have to be onus. You're putting yourself in a situation where it's onus.
Right.
You're like making a conscious decision. I'm gonna go do this, knowing that you're not gonna be able to live on the mitzvah. So, like,
right.
Like, I feel like an onus would be.
Well, I have to make a choice. I have to make a choice.
Sure.
Right. In other words, so let's look at it a different way. Let's look at it as I woke up in the morning and I went to do Pidyon Shvuyim. I woke up, I ate breakfast in the sukkah, and now I went to do some Pidyon Shvuyim. I thought it was going to take me an hour, and it ends up taking me 5 hours, and I'm really hungry, and I want to just have a quick sandwich, you know, maybe grab a nap, and then continue with my Pidyon Shvuyim activities. I'm going to the government. Pidyon Shvuyim was like a business in those days. They would kidnap people. It wasn't like today where everything was the Wild West in those days. It was feudalism. You had like a lord, and he would just do whatever he wanted with the people. The people were serfs, and they were considered the property of the landowners, and therefore the landowners would just take them. You know, they say, hey, you can have them, but you have to pay me X amount of dollars to get them back. It was, this lived on way past the times of the Mishnah and the Gemara. It was kind of happened to Marami Rutenberg, and many others. The Rush ran away from Germany to Spain because he realized that his rabbi was Maram, and he was kidding. You heard this, Mesa?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, Marami Rutenberg was basically the unofficial chief rabbi of Ashkenaz. And he was considered to be the last of the Balei HaTosfos, and he was taken in as a. I don't exactly understand how the government system worked, but he was taken in as a captive. He was jailed for some trumped up charges, and they said that if you redeem him for a large sum of money, you can have him back. So he put out a chayrim, I guess, for lack of a better term, that anyone who redeems me is in chayrim. They're not allowed to do it, and it's just going to cause them to do it again and again and again. And then obviously there are halachas about this, and there's generally speaking, it's considered an isser to redeem captives. Yoser al shavyein. I don't know if that's the exact lashon of the Gemara, but what?
Gilad Shalit was awesome.
Let's get too far off. We can tell one story and then go back to Osig B'mitzvah. Gilad Shalit is a very important cheshbon to make, and I am not. I'm very thankful that I'm not the one who has to make that cheshbon. So the point is that you're not allowed to. But if there is such an inyan of Adam, a parnis al atzibur shirabim tzrichim lo, here you have the gadol hador, and it's people need him to be there, right? So maybe you're allowed to be podeh even for more than he's actually worth. So that was the cheshbon that they made. But he said no one's allowed to do it. It's just going to lead to more and more problems. And therefore, he put out, and he said, "Not even my body. After I die, you're not allowed to, redeem me." Okay, so there's a lot of stories that go into what happened when he was in prison. But it happened to Rabbi Kiva also. Rabbi Kiva used to. There's some Mishnayos that they learned that Rabbi Kiva was in jail with the Romans, jailed him, and then they would walk by the jail, and he would scream something out the window, and they would scream something back at him, and that's how they learned actual Mishnayos like that. So the Maram, died in jail, and only. Long after he was dead, they finally a rich Jew redeemed the body and they buried him properly. But the Rush saw that things were in trouble and he was next, so he ran away. I always like to suggest that with many gross oversimplifications, the if you see the hand of Hashem throughout history, so I always like to suggest that the jailing of the Marami Rutenberg was the opening for how the Shulchan Aruch got published. So it's a few hundred years in the making, but...
Because he sparked the Rush.
Because the Rush went from Germany to Spain at that point. Spain at the time was better for the Jews than Germany. And therefore the Rush ran away from Germany, went to Spain. He became very close colleagues with the Rashba, was the great Talmud of the Ramban. And the Ramban was the first of the Sephardi Rishonim. The riff in the Rambam style was really, their own, the Sephardi style was very different from the style of the Balei HaTosfos. The Ramban really incorporated the style of the Balei HaTosfos of comparing and contrasting sugyas, and he incorporated that into the Sephardi style of learning. And the Rush coming over to Spain was really a turning point where the fusion of the different styles of learning, and his son the Tur was somebody who sort of lived in both worlds. He grew up in the style of the Balei HaTosfos, and he lived the rest of his life in Spain. So he wrote the work of the Tur, Arba Turim, which was the predecessor, but you could suggest that he wouldn't have been able to write such a universal work had he not, you know, gone from one place to the other and you know, been more of an inclusive Jew in that way, that he saw the Sephardi and the Ashkenazi styles merged into one, and eventually, obviously, that led to the Beis Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch. But anyway, the idea was that the Pidyon Shvuyim was just something that they did all the time. And I think they say in Mexico City it's like that today. If you live in Mexico City, it's like you get kidnapped and then you pay the ransom, you get them back. It's not like in America, there's like always some other reason why they kidnap people, mm-hmm. at least, you know, in the movies. But there's not like, you think it's because of this, but it's really, you know, much longer story. I don't know. But Lamaisa, you're going to do Pidyon Shvuyim. It ends up taking a lot longer than you thought. And you're starting, you're really hungry, and you want to go to sleep. And so at that point, you could say, listen, I'm Oseg B'mitzvah, I'm exhausted, I can't find a sukkah to eat in, I can't find a sukkah to sleep in, I'm going to sleep, I'm going to eat, whatever, I'm not getting involved. Am I doing something wrong? You're not doing anything wrong because you're Oseg B'mitzvah, Patim and HaMitzvah. So there was no cheshbin that went into it, you know, there was no cheshbin that went into it beforehand that sort of made you know that you were going to be violating the mitzvah sukkah. So it's not really about what you chose in that sense. You're making a choice at that moment, but you don't really have a choice. You're stuck in mitzvah A before you do mitzvah B. Anyway, it's just, I don't think that's the cheshbon. But let's hold off on the kasha, because it's a very important kasha to answer. But if you hold like Tosfos and you basically say, you have to try to be Mekayim both, then you really don't have an understanding of what Oseg B'mitzvah is really coming to teach you. I think that's what we have to keep in the back of our minds. Okay, so going forward, Tosfos does have a better raya than just tzitzis and tefillin, etc. He quotes the case of the pruta de Reb Nosson. Right, so he says, Perik ein bin amuder gabi amuder hano de machshelo aveda so afal pi de mahani le pruta de Reb Yosef. Sorry, I said pruta de Reb Nosson, I meant pruta de Reb Yosef. So the pruta de Reb Yosef, what is the pruta de Reb Yosef case? So it's like this. Basically, in those days, there used to be a thing, and it's half of Maseches Nedarim is based on this thing, that people would be muder hanoah from one another, and parts of Ksuvus as well. Right? So people would be muder hanoah from each other, and that was like a way of telling people you hated them. The guy swears he's not going to get it. Reuben swears, I'm not going to get any hanoah from Shimon. Then Reuben's walking down the street and he sees Shimon's lost object. Right? Sees Shimon's lost object. So what are we doing here? He's like, well, I should really return it to Shimon, but I said I'm not going to give him any hanah. So what am I supposed to do? So it's not, in other words, it's not a problem of getting the mitzvah, because we say mitzvos lav lehanos nifas. So just be getting a mitzvah because of Shimon. Oh no, I messed up. What did I say? Reuven's not going to get hanah from Shimon, or Shimon's not going to get hanah from Reuven? Let's assume I said Reuven's not going to get hanah from Shimon. So can he return Shimon's lost object? So let's say this lost object is a sheep, right? So now the sheep requires a minimal amount of care. You have to feed it and, you know, whatever the minimal amount of care happens for a sheep. So for 20 minutes total a day, he's going to have to be taking care of the sheep. So during that 20-minute period, it's possible that a poor man will come to the door. Now, normally, when a poor man comes to the door, you have a chiyuv to give him. So now, Reuven's going to be able to say to the poor man, I don't have to give you anything because I'm busy taking care of Shimon's sheep. I'm oseg b'mitzvah, patim in ha-mitzvah. I'm oseg in taking care of the sheep. And therefore, I have no obligation to give you any money. That's called the pruta de Reb Yosef. And the Gemara rejects it. The Gemara says, no, he should still return the lost object because the pruta de Rav Yosef is lo shchiach. It's how common is it that he's really going to, at the exact moment he's taking care of the sheep, then an ani is going to come to the door and he's going to be put from giving it and he's going to save the money. So, come on, it's not going to happen. And therefore, the whole thing is lo shchiach, and there's no reason to assume that he's going to be neheneh from Shimon. And that's how the Gemara concludes over there. So ask Tosus, what are you talking about? The called Zmancha Aveda Bebeso, Miftar Mila Mesa Rifta Laani, if the entire time that the lost object is in his house, he's putter from giving bread to the poor person, in Cain, Shrichai, that's very Shriach. right? if the sheep being in my house, I'm not taking care of the sheep at this moment. I'm resting from taking care of the sheep. If that's the case,
3 weeks.
What?
It's 3 weeks.
Could be, yeah. So I'm going to be putter from. I'm going to be putter from giving money to the poor person. So that's very shliach. So it can't be that Rashi's right. Elavade lo miftar ella bishashu osek ba. Only when he's actually doing something. You found the guy's clothing and you got to beat it out or rinse it or launder it or something like that. Right? So he says that it can't be. It's got to be dafka at the moment you're taking care of it that the poor person comes to the door. That you have to say that what it really means is if you would go to the sukkah, you would miss out on the other mitzvah. Not that you're resting from the mitzvah and therefore it's sufficient. So this is the big machlokus Rashi tells us. Rashi seems to be one extreme, although again, impossible to quantify since he's so mekatzer. Rashi seems to be on one extreme, saying that you're putter from doing other mitzvos kulzman, that you're resting from the first mitzvah, and Tosfos seems to say that no, there is a concept called efshar l'kayim shneim, and you're only putter when it's e efshar l'kayim shneim, when it's physically impossible to do both, that's when you're putter from the second mitzvah. But if it's physically possible to do both, then you are chayiv in the second mitzvah. Okay, so comes along the Ran, and he really defends the opinion of Rashi. He has a long piece over here. We're not going to read the whole thing. But he says that he believes that the correct opinion follows Rashi more so than it follows Tosfos. So he says that maybe we can find it. I don't know how you're going to find it in there based on what I'm saying from the sheet. But you see where it says, Lefichach Nira Li? I don't think it's a separate... No, it's... The Ran is Yud-Alef, I think. In Yud-Alef and Med-Alef in the Daf here, right? Yeah. I don't know if you're going to find it. It's towards the end of that big paragraph, I think. I can't remember exactly. L'fichach nira li, da osek b'mitzvah, potter min ha-mitzvah, af al pi she-yachol... I'll trade you. I can trade you if you want. You have one? He said, we don't learn anything. He said, you're pater from the mitzvah even if you could do both. And you can't prove anything from the Gemara and the Darm. Right? Obviously, it's sitting in a box, right? I found the guy's phone, so I'm charging it, right? So that it's nice and charged up when the guy comes to pick it up. So like, oh, sorry, I'm charging the phone. I can't, you're not running on a hamster wheel to get the phone to charge. It's not, you're not doing anything. You just plugged it in. So.
Wait, where are you in here?
Yeah.
Why would Tosfos read Rashi like that? There's no way that's a Rashi.
I think in general, it's a very good question. Like when you see Tosfos's kashas on Rashi, and then you think of answers for yourself, or you read a Pnei Yehoshua or something that gives the answers to Rashi. I think generally speaking, Tosfos asks kashas on Rashi that supports the opinion of Tosfos. It's an adversarial system, So it's not Tosfos's job to teach you what he thinks. Once in a while, you do find
it.
It's not Tosfos's job to tell you what he thinks Rashi really meant. It's not. They have their viewpoint, and that's what they're going to say over, and they're going to try to make their viewpoint look as valid as possible. So if you have to ask some kashas where the kasha is not such a bomb kasha at all, if you just think about it for more than a few seconds, they'll still be able to sleep at night. They're not going to say I was intellectually dishonest because I asked only a halfway decent kasha instead of a really good kasha. They pile on the kashas a lot. That's just the style of Tosfos. So the Ran is saying he doesn't think it's much of a kasha. He says that if you're charging the phone, then you're going to say that, I'm sorry, Mr. Ani, I can't give you any money because I'm charging the phone right now. And nobody thought in a million years that that's what they would say. And Rashi never thought that either. Right? So the key line, as far as I'm concerned, is the follow-up. He says, "De osek b'mitzvah minon velo me kayem mitzvah." Right, so along the lines of what you guys were saying, it's about being osek in the mitzvah. It's not about fulfilling the mitzvah. The case of the tzitzis and the tefillin and everything else, it's all about, am I quote unquote getting a mitzvah or am I doing a mitzvah? Right, so if I'm getting a mitzvah, I'm not osek in the mitzvah, I'm just fulfilling the mitzvah. That's why you try to convince people to wear tzitzis. And l'maisa, that's the reason we wear tzitzis nowadays. Why do we wear tzitzis? Right? Why does anybody wear tzitzis nowadays?
It's a kiyum,
right? It's a kiyum mitzvah. Are you chayev to wear tzitzis? You're not chayev to wear tzitzis, right? So there are three levels of wearing tzitzis. If you look in like the Mishnah Berurah, right? So he says, number one, back in the day, they used to wear four cornered garments. The people would wear it like a toga or something that was basically a square bed sheet, and they would wrap it up as such that it looked like an outfit. So there are four corners on the garment. You chayev to wear the tzitzis, right? That's one level of tzitzis where your mom is chayiv. You're wearing a four-cornered garment. Then the Gemara Menachos says, yeah, but even the people who don't wear four-cornered garments so that they're pater from tzitzis, so you can't say that they're violating anything, but they get punished be'idan rischa. Right? When Hashem is upset about something else, quote unquote, he throws that in also. Like if the guy's doing a real avera, or the guy's putting himself in a makam sakana. I think the Gemara gives an example: a person puts himself in a makam sakana. So then this is a throw in. Like, does this guy have a lot of zechuyos? Well, he doesn't even wear tzitzis, you know. So then they punish him that. So, but the post can point out that that's not us. That's not relevant to us. That even that Gemara that says you get punished b'idan rischa, that's not really our scenario, because that was a case where everyone else in the world was wearing four-cornered garments. And you, Bedafka, chose to wear the same style of clothing, but you rounded off one of the corners so that it wasn't chayiv and tzitzis. But the normal dress, like everybody was wearing those Three Musketeers ponchos, you know, I'm talking about basically a big talus cotton, you know, so everybody would wear those back in the day. So you, Dafka, chose to wear something else, to look different than everybody else, just so you wouldn't have to be chayiv and tzitzis. Or you chose to round off the corner of the garment, so you'd be pater from tzitzis. So in those cases, Hashem is angry at you because you dafka went out of your way to be mafkia yourself from mitzvah. But us, nobody else in the world is wearing a talis katan. Right? One time, we were on the senior trip in DRS. We were in Busch Gardens, and we saw a non-Jewish little non-Jewish chevra, and one of the guys was wearing a mesh talis katan. We were like, we knew what happened. One of the guys must have taken it off at some point, and then once in a while he must have picked it up. So we asked the guy, why are you wearing that? He's like, I don't know, it's a cool jersey.
With
tzitzis, yeah. His exact words were, I thought it was a jersey. So I was like, all right, that at least answers the question of whether or not you're supposed to consider the mesh beged to be a real beged. This guy holds that it is a beged. He thought it's something to wear. So the point is that generally speaking, people don't think a talis katan is something normal to wear. Right? It's not that everybody in the world is wearing these and we just happen to have to put tzitzis on ours. Right? So therefore, we wear tzitzis nowadays just to be marbe b'zechuyos, saying like, who do you think you are? You think you don't need, you know, all these zechuyos, right? So every second you're wearing the tzitzis, another mitzvah, another zechus, another, you know, so that's gufa why we wear tzitzis nowadays, dafka to get the multitude of zechuyos that we can accrue over a lifetime of wearing tzitzis. So that's mekayim mitzvah, and we dafka do it because it's not osek b'mitzvah. If it would be osek b'mitzvah, we wouldn't do it. You hear the idea? That if it would be an asek and it would take our time and our energy and our mental stress, we wouldn't do the mitzvah. We would just say it's too much work and we're not chayv in it anyway and we won't do it. The whole reason we do it is that it takes no energy and no stress. So why not do it?
Then what's Rashi getting at then? Because Rashi's definitely talking about things.
Ah, so let's see the Hemshech of the Ran now. So he's saying the difference between Rashi and Tosfos's raya's against Rashi is Osek versus Mekayim. That's the Yisod, though, right? If you're Osek, then you're Pater from the second mitzvah. If you're just Mekayim, then you're not Pater from the second mitzvah.
So
is
that why the Gemara comes to say Pratli Osek, Feltzik from Echad, Pratli Osek?
Yeah.
And then Pratli, both of them, one is Machshava, one is Action?
So, no, I think that's its own chiddush, like you pointed out earlier, that there, the chiddush of that there is a tour of tirda de machshava is a tremendous chiddush. You know, I might say, oh, chasim is torah de machshava, so he shouldn't have to say kriyashma. I'm like, no, get it together, man. Like, just get your mind right and say kriyashma, and then go back about your business. So the chiddush of the Torah is that we're not machayev the guy to do that.
But you can argue that tirda machshava isn't machayev.
No, there's no kiyum there. There's only asek. Right. The chiddush is that there's asek without kiyum, and even if the asek is just mental, that also counts as asek. So here, he's saying that. One second. Behind the time, the Padre Rachman of Chassan, Afal Gav, the Efshale Lisuve Dait. That's why we just spoke out. That's why we're Padre the Chassan, even though he could just get his mind right, Ulakayim Eshtayim, right, and do both. Kidich Sivna, as we have said. Yalfinan, Kolshu Osek Bemalachto, Shamakom, Lochaiva, Chaivasa Torah, Litroach, Ulakayim Mitzvahs, Af Al Pisha Efshar. So the way the Ran concludes is that if you're Osek, in the work of Hashem, you're not chayef to do other work of Hashem, even though you could do it. That's the sort of osik mitzvah part of
mitzvah. And that's not like it's Ran Tosfos.
And that's the machlokes Ran and Tosfos. And lechora, that's the sheet of Rashi as well. It's hard to know what Rashi actually holds because it's Iker Chosin and HaSefer. But lechora, that's the sheet of Rashi as well. In the part of what we skipped, he gives an example of if you're burying a meis mitzvah, so you. You know, if you ever dug a grave, I don't know if you've ever been to Levaya, but you go to the Levaya, they help out with, they don't even dig the grave. The funeral home uses a backhoe or something to dig the grave, and then you just take the shovels and you cover it over. But even that, partially because we want more people to be, you know, to get involved in the mitzvah, but also because it's hard. Just to cover over the body is very hard. So you wouldn't be able to necessarily do all of it in one sitting. You'd have to take a break. You know, you take a 5-minute break, you get back to work. So he's saying over there, during that short break, let's say this man Kriyashma was coming and going. So you're digging a grave and it's hard work and you're going to be taking multiple breaks. So during those breaks, you're catching your breath, you're getting your mind right, are you chayav to say Kriyashma at that moment? So he says, no. As long as you're taking the normal amount of rest that is considered, that would you would be doing anyway, then you're not chayef, even though you could, you know, bang out a kriyashma right then and there. You could do it, but you're not chayef to do it. You don't have to. You don't have to try.
Does that argue all mitzvahs shrichas kavana?
No, I don't think so. I think meaning even if you hold mitzvahs ain't shrichas kavana in general, kriyashma is different. If you look in the Gemara in the beginning of the second parak in Brachos, they talk about how much yishuv adas you have to say kriyashma, and the rishonim there say, if you look in the Ritva there, I think it's pretty befarish that the amount of kavana you have to have for kriyashma is above and beyond the concept of mitzvah tzrichas kavana. Mitzvah tzrichas kavana just means like before you get started, you say I'm doing this because it's a mitzvah, right? Kriyashma kavana for kriyashma is kavana sol machlas kabos ol machlas shemayim ol mitzvos avas Hashem yiras Hashem. It's a little bit different. Okay, so just at the end, the Ramban, the Ran concludes that nevertheless there is a concept. He calls it mios. He quotes the pasuk mios tov al tikre ra, right? Something which is good. Don't call it bad. He says that if you wanted to go ahead and do the other mitzvah, even though you're pater from it, that's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with coming along and trying to do the second mitzvah. We view that as a positive accomplishment. Not something like, well, what are you wasting your time for? Right? So that is the conclusion of the Ran, that you're not chayef to do the other mitzvah, but if you want to do the other mitzvah, you may. Right? Now, that... Yeah, sorry.
Is there like a chain of like what takes precedence? Like you can't just get out of every single mitzvah you want by doing another mitzvah that requires a kiyum. Like you can't just say, oh, I'm not going to put on tefillin today because I'm going to try my hardest to not have to.
I don't know what you mean by that.
I'm saying... You can't just pick another mitzvah, so you don't have to do a mitzvah that you're chayav in.
It's true. Well, the Gemara gave that example of, let's say the second mitzvah that you're going to miss out on is more important, quote unquote, than the first mitzvah. Right? We said, you're going to shech the Karban Pesach. So the Karban Pesach was an asei sheyesh bo karis. There's only two mitzvahs that are asei. Asei Sheish Bokaris, and the Dafka gave both of those examples. You're going Lomol as Bino, or Lishchot as Pisco. The Dafka went out of their way to give those two examples. And yet, we say Osik B'mitzvah, Patim and Amitzvah. Right? So this leads us to the Ritva's Kasha, which is really your Kasha, which is, I don't get it. The Ritva basically says, I agree with Tosfos. I agree with Tosfos that you should, if only you're only Patim from the other mitzvah, if it's E'efshar L'kayim Shneim. If you look,
Does the Rango's father say that you shouldn't fulfill the other mitzvah?
No, he says you can if you want. That's very important. Let's just get that clear because it's gonna be important for the punchline. The Ran, who seems to agree with at least fundamentally with Rashi, so the Ran holds that it's still good to do the other mitzvah.
Isn't there a Rashi and Brachot? I mean, just to see, I did Rashi and Brachot in the beginning of the third paragraph that said.
Ain't Srichim,
there's absolutely no
fiyuv
at all to do it?
Ain't Srichim, there's no fiyuv, sure. That doesn't mean
is that his wording? I thought it would be more intense.
What are you talking about? First of all, you're talking about a person who is a Mishameso Muta Lefanov.
Yeah.
So it's true that Rashi learns Mishameso Muta Lefanov is totally in Osik B'mitzvah, but I don't recall. I don't recall anything specific from that Lashon that would preclude what the Ran is saying.
Doesn't mean that it's not a good thing to do.
Ein Srichim would fit in perfectly with the Ran, which would be that you don't have to do the mitzvah. It's not your obligation to do so. I'll get it on the computer. But anyway, let me just bring up the Ritva while I'm looking. Not a problem. You remember what daf it is?
Yeah, beginning of the third paragraph.
Yeah, that's why it's good to have a Gemara. But I think I'm going to look at. I think I'm going to say Yud Tes. Wrong. It is not Daf Yates.
Good Zion Amid Beis.
Good Zion Amid Beis. Okay. There we go. Okay. So which Rashi are you looking for? Yeah. So that's exactly good, right?
That's exactly good.
So you don't have to say Hamotzi if you don't want to. So that's I want to get back to that. If we get a chance, I'd love to get back to that issue of what exactly it means you don't have to make a bracha. Is that really true that we right. Because we'll see that that's not universally accepted. The Rashi and Demai on that Rashi. There's a comment on Maseches Demai. The Rabbeinu Shimshon Mishantz has a commentary on Mishnayos where he learns the concept of Ein Mavorchen Alav, Ein Mezamnen Alav differently than Rashi, which helps a lot for the understanding. Okay. Anyway, so the Ritva over here asks the Kashi. He says, "Wait a minute. I agree with Tosfos. I don't like Rashi. I don't like the Ran. I agree with Tosfos." So. The idea is that you have to really try to do both. And then he asks the simple kasha, wait a second. Since v'kevan delo miftar ela ba'oda osik b'mitzvah zu, since you're only putter from mitzvah B, kol zman that you're doing mitzvah A, lama likra, why do I need a pasik to teach me osik mitzvah putter min a mitzvah? Pshita, obviously it's true. Lama yaniach mitzvah zu mipnei mitzvah charis. Why would I put aside the mitzvah that I'm doing now for the sake of a second mitzvah? So we asked in a little bit of a fancier way. We said, wait a minute, there's a concept in general. Amos Rachman Apatre, you don't have to put aside everything you're doing for something else. If you can't do both, then just stick with what you're doing. So Ritva has a very important answer for us. V'yesh lomar, doha kamash malon, de'afilu ba'i la'aniach mitzvah zu la'asos mitzvah acheres gedol la'himena. Let's say you want to put aside mitzvah. You say, I can't miss the Karban Pesach. I'm not going to be able to come back for Pesach Sheni. And I can't. It's too important. I want to be part of Klal Yisrael. You know, here I am doing this seemingly insignificant mitzvah, and I want to be part of the Jewish people. I want to have a Seder, for crying out loud. Like, it's not too much to ask to be able to go to a Seder in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, and eat the Karban Pesach, right? So he's saying, I want to stop. He says, Ein HaRishus B'Yodi, you're not allowed. You're not allowed to stop doing Mitzvah A to do Mitzvah B. Even if Mitzvah B is more important. Solka Da'idecha Minan, if Tureyu the Mifter Minan, I would have thought, okay, you're Pater from Mitzvah B. You don't have to do Mitzvah B. Avali Ba'i L'Mishvak Ha L'Mevet Idach HaRishus B'Yodi. If you want to put aside one and do the other, you have permission to do so. Kamash Malan, de kevan de pater min acheres, harehi etzlo achshav kidvar shel rishus. Since you're pater from the other one, the second mitzvah becomes a rishus. Va'asur laniach mitzvah sam ipnei dvar davar shehu shel rishus. You're not allowed to stop doing mitzvah A, which is a mitzvah, it's a chiyuv, to do mitzvah B, which is a rishus. So once the chi of a mitzvah A sets in and you're doing mitzvah A, mitzvah B is kilu, it's not there. It doesn't apply to you. It's a rishus.
Even if it seems less important?
Even it is less important. Meaning, forget it. Or even if the second one is more important. You know, we say in general, you should be zohar b'mitzvah kalak b'chamura, right? I think it's twice in Pirkei Avos. You should be careful with small mitzvahs like big mitzvahs. But l'maisa, we know there is a hierarchy of mitzvahs. In the end of the day, when the Torah tells you certain ones are more important than others, but nevertheless, you're not allowed to stop, right? And then the second answer is Od Lamadnu Akasuv Dafagav Ikale Mitzvah Kavua Lizman Vaday. You knew it was coming, like you knew. Then this is really your question.
Yeah.
You know Kriya Shema is coming. It's Kigon Kriya Shema Vishchita Sapesach VeKodam Lachem Ba'Asalo Mitzvah Acher SheTivat Lenu Men Acherim Im Yasko Ba. So you say you don't have to make that cheshbon. Say like, well, if I start doing this one, I'm going to miss Kriya Shema later. I'm going to miss the Korban Pesach later. You don't have to make that cheshbon. And therefore, it's that. Those are the two answers of the Ritva. Now, based on that, especially the first answer of the Ritva, I just wanted to give a very, very simple lumdus that I don't like, and then just a simple lumdus that I do like to try to explain the machlokas we're showing here. Of Tosus and the Ram, yeah. So the what people like to say, you could, I think the Stipler does say this, but I don't think he means the way people say he means it. But the standard way to explain these types of this type of machlokes in general, there's always a big, you can call it a Yetzer Tov, you can call it a Yetzer Hara, it doesn't matter. There's always I call it Yitzhara. There's a big Yitzhara to try to like apply, you know, general Shas Chakiros to every machlokas in Shas. Like a friend of mine once said, his Rebbe said there's really only, I don't remember the number, I'm making up the number, there's only really 35 Chakiros in all of Shas. And you can apply them to every sugya. So I find that hard to believe. So there aren't 10,000, but there's somewhere between 35 and 10,000. It's not 35, you know, or whatever. It's not every machlokes is totally in every other machlokes in Shas in terms of the way it's meant to be understood. But this is one of those times where you see it; it's like right there for you, so you want to grab onto it. So what's the standard? In other words, those who want to explain the machlokes between Rashi and Tosfos or the Ran and Tosfos over here, so it seems like a classic, a classic example of what they call hutra versus dechuya, right? Hutra versus dechuya. You guys know the terms hutra and dechuya. So basically, the case where it really does apply is let's say eating on Yom Kippur, right? Eating on Yom Kippur. So you ever had to eat on Yom Kippur? Me neither, thank God. Hopefully, you know, you never will. You'll live many, many years, and you'll be healthy enough that you can always fast on Yom Kippur. But, nevertheless, there are people who have to eat on Yom Kippur from time to time. So what do we do for them? Right. So there's a concept called, we give them pachos mikishir. We give them small amounts, because there's a concept in general, and this is the source of the concept, is why I brought up this example, is there's a concept of chatzi shir. If you do chatzi shir of an aveira, I want to eat a cheeseburger, and I don't know, I don't buy into this impossible burger business. I hope the impossible, right? The impossible. It can't be that that's a real cheeseburger, you know? So I want to eat a real cheeseburger, but I also want to keep the Torah. So I'll eat less than a kezias of cheeseburger, and it won't be an isser bas b'cholif. So the Gemara has a machlokas. Yochanan Reish Lakish, opening sugya in eighth parak in Yuma. So he's saying chatzi shir aser min haTorah or aser mid rabbanan. That's the shayla. So Rabbi Yochanan holds aser min haTorah, and then Reish Lakish holds aser mid rabbanan. We passing like Rabbi Yochanan that chatzi shir is aser min haTorah. But everyone agrees that if you don't eat the shir, you don't get the onesh. So in the case of the cheeseburger, I don't get malchus for eating basar b'chalav unless I eat a kezias of basar b'chalav. If I eat less than a kezias, so then I still did an iser d'oraisa, but I don't get malchus, right? So similarly, on what's the onus for eating on Yom Kippur?
Karis,
right? So I don't get karis if I eat less than a koseves agasa. It's a different shear on Yom Kippur for whatever reason, not now. But so if I don't eat a koseves agasa on Yom Kippur, I don't get karis. So if a person is sick and they need to eat on Yom Kippur, so what we do is we cheshbin the shear of kedei achilas pras. We give them the most machmir shear of kedei achilas pras, and we give them the most machmir smallness of the size of a koseves, and then we tell them, all right, so basically what the practical ramifications of that is we tell them to take a shot glass every 9 minutes or every 10 minutes, right? People who've done it say that it's worse than not eating. They say it's like a tease. You're eating this, a shot glass is worth of food every 10 minutes or so. So that's how we do it, because we're saying, he's a cholish yesh bo sakana, he's allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. Yeah, but we don't claim that the fact that there's pikuach nefesh means that Yom Kippur is completely hutra. There's no such thing as Yom Kippur anymore for you. We say it's dechuya, it's pushed aside. Right, and therefore, we specifically want to violate the Avera as little as possible, because the Avera is still here. We just want to, we just view it as pushed aside a little bit, right? Similarly, on Shabbos, you have to be machal Shabbos for pikuach nefesh. So the question is, how do you do it? Should you do it with a shinoi, or should you do it normally? So every posek on earth agrees, you should do it in the most efficient way possible. You should not waste your time trying to make more shinuyim, thereby putting the person's life further at risk. Right, you do it efficiently. You do it the right way. But let's say there's equal efficiency. Do it with a shinui or without a shinui. There's this place been in business for a long time. Right? Machon Tzomet. You ever heard of it? Now, they make all these machines. So some of them they make because it's actually mutter to use them legamre, like the special Shabbos elevators that they make or whatever. But some of the things that they make are still usher to use. But for a pikuach nefesh situation, it works almost as well as the regular machine. You know, there's an insignificant difference, but it's done in such a way that it's only an issa d'rabbana, not an issa d'oraisa.
Like a metal detector, right? Hotel?
Maybe, I don't know. I don't know all the details of everything that they make, but they make a lot of cool things. So they do it in such a way that it's only a grama ba'alma or it's something like that. And therefore, even though you're allowed to be with al Shabbos to b'kuach nefesh, they want you to violate Shabbos as little as possible. Because that's based on the Shit and Rishonim that Shabbos is dechuya, not hutra, right? So this is the classic Shas discussion of hutra versus dechuya, and it takes on many ramifications. And some wish to say, maybe the Stipler, some wish to say that that's gufa the machlokas over here. It's a classic example of hutra versus dechuya. That according to Rashi and the Ran, the first mitzvah is the ikur. And therefore, we view the second mitzvah as hutra. It's like the mitzvah is not even there, right? And therefore, to go ahead and try to do the second mitzvah is not necessary. It's hutra,
you know, like
right?
Or whatever.
So maybe, yeah. And whereas, according to Tosfos, we view the second mitzvah only as dechuya. It's still there, but you have the right to push it aside. And therefore, you can do the first mitzvah at the expense of the second mitzvah. But kol zman, it's possible to do the second mitzvah. That mitzvah is right there. It's staring at you, waiting to be done. And therefore, it's only pushed aside. Kol zman, that it has to be pushed aside. Right? And therefore, it's dechuya. And that's how you understand the machlokas. And it's Shalom Yisrael. It's a nice little lumdus you could throw into the machlokas Rishonim. But the reason I think it doesn't work, I think very, very obvious in the words of the Rishonim themselves. Meaning, the Ran supposedly would fall out on the Hutra side. Right? But what does the Ran say? Duran specifically, at the last paragraph in his long shtickle here that he has, he says, if you can do the second mitzvah, that's great. Not that the second mitzvah cannot be done because it doesn't exist. Right? He says specifically that if you can do it, should is a little much, but he says specifically, I just want to tell you, if it's not too much trouble, you are still putter, but if you do it, it's a good thing.
Doesn't the Ritva fit much better then? Because he says it's your should.
Oh, so perfect. So the Ritva fits in much better with the Shita of Chutra. Because what does he say?
He says it's a Rishus.
It's Kilo, it doesn't exist. But that's backwards. Because the Ritva is like Tosfos. The Ritva says, wait a second. The Ritva says, you have to do both. Mashma dechuya. And then the Ritva goes ahead and says, no, it's not dechuya, it's hutra. So you see clearly that hutra versus dechuya does not play a role here. Because again, I've heard people say back, well, how do you know the Ritva agrees with Tosfos? I don't. Maybe Tosfos, in other words, if I have a choice of equating the Ritva and Tosfos, who are two Rishonim who start off exactly the same, so I'm not going to say that, oh, the Ritva argues on Tosfos, he agrees with Tosfos fundamentally, he answers a great kasha against Tosfos, but from his answer, you see that he holds differently than Tosfos. Why would I say that? Just so you can say your shtickle Torah? Like, that doesn't make sense. I would much rather line up the two Rishonim who say the first half of what they say is exactly the same, and the second half of what the Ritva says answers a difficult kasha against Tosfos. I'd rather line him up with Tosfos any day than just to say, oh, because I'm so chalishing to say Hutra Dechuya. Why would I want to choose to say that? So if you're somehow like you're under contract from the Hakira Society of the world to say Hutra Dechuya, so fine. Then you could dray it out and say, all right, fine, it doesn't work in the Ritva, but maybe it works in Tosfos. But why would you say that?
Stuck with the question on
Tosfos. Right, so you'd have to answer Tosfos a different way. But the point is, it's not muchrach to say Hutra Dechuya, and it's more muchrach not to say it. Because you have the Ran, who should say Hutra, and therefore to do the second mitzvah is nothing. I could ekaf you suggesting maybe even to make a bracha on that mitzvah would be a bracha levatala, right? And he, Dafka, says, no, go ahead and do the other mitzvah. And then you have the Ritva, who would say Dechuya, and he says black on white that the second mitzvah is Hutra. So I would not make that cheshbon. I don't like that at all. I think it's a very simple. Sometimes the answer is a local answer. It's not something fancy that goes throughout all of Shas. It's a local answer. There's a simple concept of osek b'mitzvah poter min hamitzvah. The question is, how do we define osek b'mitzvah? Do you look at it from a global, to look at it from a larger perspective of how do I view the entire din of the mitzvah. You know, there are people like myself who have no concept of how long things take. Baharaya, I've been going on for over an hour, right? So the people don't understand how long things take, right? So my wife, I call my wife, I say, I'll be home in 5 minutes. She's like, where are you? I'm like, in such and such a place. She's like, you'll be home in 15 minutes. I'm like, what are you talking about? 5 minutes away. It's like, nothing. She's like, I'll see you in 15 minutes. 15 minutes, I pull up into the driveway. You know, like, I don't have a concept of, she's like, my wife says, like, the reason I come late to things is, she said, it's not because you don't want to be on time. You just have no concept of time.
That's true. Right? Your wife is always right, and you're bad with time.
Right. No, I'm bad with time because I just don't understand how long things take, right? So how do we view the mitzvah? How long do things take? Do we view it in a general sense? This mitzvah will take me 20 minutes. Why? Because I'm the guy who'll say, oh, the mitzvah will take 5 minutes. Why? Because how long does it take to do this? Right? How long does it take to do this? If I would do it, beginning, middle, end, 5 minutes, finished. Right? So like if I was at Ashrei Avol Tzion, my wife would say, when are you coming home? Shouldn't, communicate during Ashrei Avol Tzion either, but let's pretend it happened. My wife, asked me, when are you coming home? I'm up to Ashrei Avol Tzion. I'll be home in 5 minutes. Like, you'll be home in 15 minutes. You got to fold up your towels, wrap up your tefillin, put everything away in the right place, walk to the car, get in the car. So am I osek b'mitzvah? Kol zman? How long am I osek b'mitzvah for? 5 minutes or 15 minutes? So I would say 5 minutes. My wife would say 15 minutes because that's how long it takes. You understand? So Tosfos is saying, Ozik b'mitzvah is 5 minutes. Now, the nimshol is not exact because they both, let's assume they both know how long things take. But the Tulsa says the osik b'mitzvah aspect is 5 minutes. You get 5 minutes to do this mitzvah, you don't get six. And therefore, if you have 6 minutes, then you have to spend that 6th minute doing something else. And you don't get that choice. That's the definition of osik b'mitzvah. However, Rashi and the Ran say no. Osik b'mitzvah means 15 minutes because this mitzvah is going to knock you out. It's going to tire you and it's going to require some rest time. And therefore, maybe 5 minutes of hard labor is going to make 15 minutes of asek. Yeah.
How many times does Rambam say Prat L'chosin?
I don't think he would understand it any differently. I think, in other words, the Torah's chiddush is that they allow for mental anguish based on a mitzvah to can count as Asek.
How would that look in the Rav Chakira? There's no time on Asek, on the chasen. It's tiered up in machshava. There's no time limit on that.
Right, and therefore, first of all, it's not necessarily the same din. Meaning we have two different psukim which teach us osik b'mitzvah and prat b'chasen. So it's not a kasha anyway. But I don't think it's problematic regardless, because I think that in the end you're going to have a cheshbon that Tosos will say like the chasen is Torah tir de the mitzvah. So you could still apply the rules for tir de the mitzvah versus as you see fit. I can't say it exactly. But because it's hard to quantify, but you could apply the rules regardless.
Is tirda different than asek? Like, because tirda is something that doesn't necessarily mean active versus passive, whereas Tosu's understanding is purely active versus passive.
Ah, so let's hold off on the active versus passive. I don't know if it's active versus passive.
Or just active versus not doing anything at all. Resting. What is resting?
Right. What is resting? So right. I wouldn't say resting is the classic example of passive, yeah. But resting is not, in Tosus's view, it's not part of the Asik b'mitzvah. Mm-hmm. And therefore, at the end of the day, you'd be chayev to do the second mitzvah, kol zman that it was physically possible or mentally possible for you to do it.
Yeah, the clue of the Gemara that says the next Tosus, that clearly implies that it's part of the...
Right, so Tosus doesn't bother to answer that kasha per se. I think Tosus basically would suggest very simply that to go out of your way to find a sukkah would actually shtare the whole thing that you were trying to accomplish. So I traveled, 30 miles in a day to see the Reish Galusa. Now I'm going to go 5 miles out of my way to find a sukkah. So then I'm going to have to go an additional 5 miles. It's just not worth it. Right. So in the end of the day, it's still considered that you are it's necessary to do it that way. But all right, there's a lot more to say on this. If we get a chance, God willing, we'll see more. My pleasure.